Hi, everyone.
Hi, Kim.
How's everyone doing? Oh, wow. It sounds like there's 162 people. Fantastic.
There are.
Oh, I just counted. I just heard one more person laugh. 163. 164.
Yep.
So how's everyone doing tonight?
Great.
I was having a little bit. I tried to three-way in Farouk just a moment ago, but the reception to India was so bad that I could barely hear him, so I asked him to call in directly. Farouk, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm on the line.
Fantastic. Okay, so I'm going to mute everyone out, and we're going to start the interview, and then towards the end of the call, I will give an opportunity for anybody who would like to ask any questions that they want, okay? So, as I said, I'm gonna mute the call out, but then towards the end of the call, I'll unmute it, and if people would like to ask questions, they're more than welcome to do so.
Okay.
So, hold on a second, everyone. Okay, so first of all, let me introduce my very good friend and mentor, Dr. Farouk Master. I had the good opportunity to meet Dr. Master a few years ago when I was traveling in India teaching. And I was in Bombay, and I was presenting some different cases, and there was quite a large number of homeopaths, I would say maybe 200, 300 homeopaths in the audience, and I was presenting fairly difficult cases. And when I had shown these cases to homeopaths in North America, basically no one was able to solve any of the cases. So I was very surprised that there was a little group of homeopaths off to the side who, every time I put up a case on the computer screen, announced the remedy. And it was literally amazing because within a minute or two of me putting up the case, they knew the remedy. And so after my presentation, I walked over to the group, and it turned out to be a Farouk Master and his students. And what really impressed me about that was not only that Farouk had this encyclopedic knowledge of the remedies and was such a great prescriber and teacher, but that he was able to teach his students to practice homeopathy at the level that he was practicing. And that's what really impressed me, is because we so oftentimes see teachers who are very dynamic and very knowledgeable, and they go out and they do these presentations, but you oftentimes see that they're not able to impart that ability to practice at that level in their students. And that's what really impressed me about Dr. Master. Yes, he's written 20 books. Yes, he knows Materia Medica and the repertory better than anybody you'll ever meet. Those are all true things. But what I think is most impressive is his genuine commitment to share homeopathy around the world, to make it known, to teach others, to be able to help suffering humanity. And so it's my great honor and great privilege to introduce Dr. Farouk Master. Thank you so much for taking the time out to be on this call.
Well, thank you so much. It's my pleasure, my honor.
Please, my pleasure. Okay, well, let me just start. I know that you have a new book out on the treatment of children, and I just wanted to quickly ask, how did you get the idea of writing this book?
Yeah, see, after I did my MD, you know, I was doing a post in the hospital, in a neonatology department, you know, and during this period, you know, I was very keen that if I can introduce some homeopathic medicine in the neonatology and department of pediatrics, the most important stumbling block was that how to take the history, because as you know that these little ones, they don't talk. And so I was constantly in the process of evolving a methodology, evolving a system, evolving, trying to find out some principles or some guidelines which will help me to understand the child, which will help me to observe the child, which will help me to analyze the symptom of the child. And slowly I started my work from zero, and I started taking a huge help from the field of what is known as observation, child watching, infant watching, trying to understand the child psychology, trying to understand the socioeconomic patterns of the parents, you know, and the environment and how it influences the child, the infant. And so slowly I started making my notes, my observations on certain remedies, much more beyond the symptoms of Materia Medica, or trying to understand the symptoms in a very deeper way. And that is how I started collecting my work for many, many years. Maybe for 10 to 15 years I started collecting this material. I tried to apply that on the children. And then when I started getting results out of that, you know, I tried to put them together, and the book is in your hands.
Thank you, thank you. Well, we've already gotten tremendous feedback on it, so I know it's going to be... I'll tell you, my personal opinion, having read the book now, I really do believe it is the single best book on homeopathic treatment of children that we currently have. Can you tell us a little bit about the structure of the book?
Yeah. See, what has happened was that it is very essential that one just does not start reading the raw materia medica, you know. And so what I did was that my first important chapter was on what is known as the introduction, you know. And in this introduction, I would like to explain from the 0 month, you know, as soon as the child is born, till the time the child reaches the maximum age in a pediatric age group, that is 12 years, what will be the child prone at a different phases of life. As for example, between 0 months to 1 month, the common thing that we have observed is what is known as a difficult child syndrome, you know. And between, say, 1 month and 12 months, we have seen a lot of what is known as aggression without reason, or backward in a normal growth, or echolalia, or failure to have a good eye contact. In early childhood disorders, we have focused more on what is known as attention deficit, hyperactivity disorders, childhood neurosis, negative attachment disorders of infancy and childhood. And in a later stage, when the child crosses about 6 to 7 years old, we see a lot of childhood psychosis, childhood maniac depressive episodes, conduct disorders, oppositional disorders, dyslexias, psychosomatic disorders. So this is what is in the first part of the introduction of my book. The second part chiefly deals with the personality profile of a homeopathic pediatrician, that what qualities a homeopathic pediatrician should have, you know, basically, because to treat a pediatric case, you should sharpen your skill as a homeopathic doctor in a little more way, like as far as your academic training is concerned, your clinical experience is concerned, you know, and with how much confidence, patience, and politeness you approach the case, the human approach with pleasing personality, and all those factors I have discussed. Then comes the very difficult part, and that is the case-taking part. You know, in case-taking, basically we are focusing more on what is known as how to take the case of a mother, how to take a case of a father, what questions you should ask the mother, what questions you should ask the mother. What is the aim behind asking such questions? And then a very huge chapter comes on observation. This is one area where we have gone much more in deeper, how to observe a newborn infant and a toddler, and how does the child, you know, sit in the mother's lap, what is the emotion of the child when he is in the lap of the mother, what is the emotion of the child when he is lying on the bed, when he is all alone, how does the newborn cry, what are the various types of crying, which breath he prefers more to suck, how does the child suck the breast? Every little thing is important in homeopathy. No observation should be neglected. How does the child demand the feed? How does the child go to sleep? Where does he perspire? How does he eat? Every small detail is given in this particular chapter of observation. Not only that, the physical appearance also is very important. The color of the hair, the color of the eyes, the pattern of the growth of the hair on the face, and the pattern of the dentition, how the child develops, and which game he loves to play. And every small aspect has been included. Then comes the physical examination from the point of medical point of view, so how you try to observe the child's behavior and the gait and the height and the weight and the facial experiences. And you do a systemic examination from head to toe and what each part of the body signifies in the history. And after we finish this particular major part, the second part of the book comes, and that is a slight presentation of skills in treating the newborn. And in that, there are certain slides which are given in this book. I think so more than 100 slides have been described. And finally, I have started with the part 3 of the book, and that is the description of the remedy. Now, mind you, this description is not materia medica compiled from various authors of materia medica. These are purely my observations, which I have repeatedly confirmed in my practice. So you cannot compare this as a, what is known as a complete materia medica of that remedy, but these are just the observation which we have repeatedly confirmed. These observations one may not find in the original proving of the remedy, but these are basically derived from the successful cases cured, observed over a period of 3 to 5 years, confirmed, and then we have tried to put this into a remedy form, and more than about 70 remedies have been described in this particular book. After this, we have got a very detailed index which will help a person to exactly find out where and what he wants to look into the book. And this is in short the structure of my book.
Farooq, there's also a CD that comes with the book as well. Can you tell us a little
bit? Yeah, there's a beautiful CD, yeah, which will help you for the search facilities. And you type any word, you know, which you see with the patient, and then you can come to know exactly that that particular word is on the which page of the book and the which chapter of the book. So that
Thank
will make the research very easy.
Thank you. I know, having been at your clinic with all the doctors working underneath you, that it's a pretty amazing place to learn really what is going on in practice. And I know that the book is really just a constellation of these types of observations over a period of, you know, decades, really. One of the questions I wanted to ask you, Farooq, is how is the treatment of children different from the treatment of adults in homeopathy? Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. Of course, see, what is happening, as I told you, in the most important thing is that we are dealing with a person who doesn't have a big IQ, because, as you know, the intelligence develops as the child grows old. So that is a big stumbling block, that there is no speech, there is not enough maturity. Even when the child has a speech, one cannot 100% exactly rely on what the child wants to express, because a child may have its own language, the child may have his own symbolic influence, symbolic interpretation, and one has to understand the child's psychology much more in detail than any adult person, you know. So this is the one very important thing. Second important thing is that it is very difficult to observe a child as compared to a human being, because many times, as you know, in a hospital practice, when a child comes to you, child is not easily prepared for any examination, or child is not easily prepared for any observation, because many times looking at the white laboratory cloth and the stethoscope around your neck, you know, they are always in a constant state of anxiety and fear. So one has to remove all those things, you know, one has to become a friend to a child and go very close and play with them and, you know, give them some biscuits and cookies and sweets, and then this is how you observe. And you may not complete the whole observation in the first visit. Many times it may take 2, 3, 4 visits, you know, to observe the child. So this is the second difference between the adult and the child. The third is that it is very important to understand the parents to understand the child. This is a very important thing in pediatric practice. Because if the parents are sick, the child is sick, you know. It's like this. And in adults, this is not so important. So one has to understand the family pattern. To the extent, you know, that many times we understand the dream of the child, you know, and analyze the dream of the child, only to understand the family pattern about the father, about the mother. Or we try to understand the hobby of the child, you know, or what particular toy he is basically trying to play with. That toy itself could be a symbol, it could be a symbol to understand why a child plays with that, and then on later detailed inquiry one can know about the family pattern. So this family pattern is very important aspect of a pediatric age group, which is not so important in a child. And the last and the most important thing is that the interpretation of the rubrics, you know, the symptoms into the rubrics is quite different in adults as compared to the child, you know, because as you go to the child, you know, many times when you ask about the desire aversion, the child may give you 20-25 desires. You know, I like popcorn, I like this, I like this, I like this. Ultimately, you land nowhere and you don't know what to take and what not to take. Many times, child gives a very vague reply to the questions, you know, so that is why you have to be a little very careful about, child should not lead you into a wrong direction, the answers which they give you. And there are certain things which are very common in child, like fear of dark, like fear of dog and fear of animal, fear of ghost and fear of being alone. And all those common childhood fears should not be confused with the original symptoms of the child, you know. So all these are the differences between a pediatric case and otherwise the basic law of homeopathy and the basic fundamental rules of homeopathy remain same whether it's a pediatric or an adult.
Thanks, Farooq. You know, in the repertory, there are many rubrics where you have a general rubric, and then as a sub-rubric, it'll be the same symptom, and it will say in children. So when you have a situation like that, like, for example, you have a rubric, fear of the dark, and then below it, you'll have a fear of the dark in children. Do you only focus on these sub-rubrics that specify children, or do you also apply the generalized rubric for children as well?
No, I would rather go for, I would not take this because this could be a little dangerous rubric, you know, because as far as I know, there are only six remedies in that rubric of fear of children. The Baraita cup stands very high, but rather I would go for the general fears, you know.
The general ones are
I
better.
I would not go for, I may not, it's a little risky, you know, to take that, especially for the beginners, you know, so I would be a little skeptical about that.
But sometimes you do use those rubrics, or you never, or you stay away from them all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Can you maybe you could tell us about a case from your own practice, something that stands out as
very important. See, most important thing that I have learned many lessons in my life. You know, the most important lesson that I learned was that not. Every remedy in the homeopathic materia is very unique on its own. Every materia medica has its shadow intermingled with similar looking remedies. And that is why, you know, many times when I have to prescribe antimtart to a child in asthma, I have landed giving ipeca, I have landed giving ammonium cup, I have landed giving kali cup. And when I had to give ammonium cup to the child, I have landed up giving antimonitart. So what happens is that because the picture of materia medica is very crystal clear and clear cut, they always intermingle with other remedies. It is very important that we study those remedies and then gradually differentiate to the last extent. Now, I'll give you a very nice case. This was a case, you know, of a child whom I had seen in my hospital. Now, this particular child had got a very bad infection, you know, and they were talking about some very rare virus, you know, which comes from Japan, and that affected the heart of the child, you know, and the child's pulse rate was very low, and the ECG was a little abnormal, and the doctors were thinking that the child is suffering from what is known as endocarditis, and they tried giving some antibiotics, and they give some medicines for the proper pumping of the heart, and well, everything was given to the child, but the child was not at all better. The child was crying, there was no appetite, there was a low-grade fever, you know, and the child was very cranky, constantly trying to be, you know, from the one hand of the mother to another hand of the mother and from father to mother, and will stay in the father's arm for some time and then will go to the mother's arm, and was screaming, was restless, you know, very cranky and a very irritable child. So when you look at the child, you know, immediately you think, oh God, this is a case of Sina, you know, and I would like to give Sina to this particular child, you know. Now the age of the child was about 4 years and about 8 months, something like that. And we start talking with the parents, you know, that how did the whole episode started and why this is happening to the child. Unfortunately, their parents are not so well accustomed with what information we want to have them as a homeopathic physician. So they have to strain their memory for giving us the right history. And then we found out on history that this particular child has developed this illness 1 month after there was a major quarrel between the family members, you know, living in that particular house, and the child became sick exactly 1 month after that, and child was witness to such a massive violence, quarrel and arguments and shouting and, you know, all these things. So this was very important for us that after that particular episode, the child started developing this fever and stopped eating, and then this problem with the heart and the endocarditis took place. So I took this as a very important aspect in the history. And the mother said that the basic nature of the child is that he is very, very obstinate. He always loves to be carried. He refuses to walk even for a few yards. You know, he will just complain that, I don't want to walk and you have to carry me. The child is very sensitive to music, you know. And when I examined the child, I saw that the child was constantly, you know, trying to moisten the lip, you know, like as if she is a pulsatilla patient, you know, and something was very striking that why not think of pulsatilla now that pulsatilla also comes very close to Sina that I was thinking. The tongue was white coated, which was another finding which I saw. The tonsils were a little bit inflamed, you know. And the mother said that the child does not want any tight clothing around the abdomen. So these were my observations, these were my totality. And at that time, I could not think beyond that, and I started the child with a Sina. You know, I gave Sina. I repeated Sina in 30th potency. I waited for 4 days, but there was no response. The reason was that I was not trying to give much importance to that rubric, to that symptom in the form of a rubric, you know. And then I found, I considered the rubric ailments from being abused. Now see, here the word abuse is a generalized rubric, you know. Here this abuse could be verbal abuse, it could be a physical abuse, it could be a sexual abuse, this particular rubric of ailments from abuse. And here I took the abuse because it was a sort of verbal abuse, because even though the child was not scolded, the child was witness to all the scolding, to all the reprimands, to all the scorning which was existing in that particular house, and that episode was for few hours, you know. So the child was in the center, and there was arguments, and all those things. So I took ailments from abuse. I took screaming. I took shrieking. I took obstinate child, you know. And I took the rubric dryness of the lip has to be moistened, you know. And I took the white coating of the tongue. And I selected a remedy, creosote. And believe me, the result was instantaneous. After 7 days, when we repeated the electrocardiogram of the child, there was no endocarditis, the pulse came to normal, the fever was much better, the appetite started gaining, and within a period of about 40 to 45 days, the child was absolutely healthy. We observed the child for next 6 months, there was not a trace of endocarditis. And this was one of the most memorable cases, and my detailed study of creosote, where I never used creosote at such a deeper level.
Have you prescribed creosote for children often, Farooq, since then?
Yes. After that particular episode, I have started using creosote, and my important symptoms where I always focused on creosote is being abused sexually. And another very important aspect of a creosote that I always look for is the sort of a, you know, cross peevish nature. Absolutely, it resembles, you know, Sina. It resembles the picture star, resembles Mercury. The children are very restless, you know, which are and moaning constantly. They are moaning. And then they have the typical craving, you know, for sour. This is very important, that crave for sour and a barbecue meat, you know. In India, we eat a lot of barbecue chicken, you know, as a recipe. So the barbecue meat and the desire for sour is very important for me to understand creosote.
That's fantastic. I've never heard that description in children before. That sounds very, I've heard very different descriptions of that remedy in adults. That's very good information. Could you maybe tell us a little bit about your views on pediatric posology?
Yeah, pediatric posology. See, what has happened was that for many years in my life, you know, let's say for first 10 years to 12 years of my practice, I was chiefly prescribing on the centesimal scale, but it is since last about, say, 5 to 7 years, I have gradually shifted to the LM scale, you know, basically, and I was strongly influenced by the 6th edition of the Organon, where Hahnemann clearly advocates the efficacy of the LM scale. after selecting this particular LM scale, I went to one more methodology, and that is trying to dilute a medicine in a particular way, especially in acute situation. What I do is that I take one globule of a selected potency of an LM scale. I usually start from LM1 and go higher. So I just take one globule, put it in a glass of water of about, say, 8 ounces, and I just stir it, you know. I stir 20 times. After I stir 20 times, I take one drop from that one glass and put it into the second glass of 8 ounces of water. And again, I stir 20 times. Like that, I do for 5 glasses, you know. And then from the 5th glass, I take one drop and put it on the tongue of the child. And that becomes the first dose. And then as per the requirement, we start giving from that 5th glass, you know, after every 20 stirs, one dose more if there is a need. And this particular posology has helped me in two ways. Number one, the results are much faster. Number two, there is no medicinal aggravation at all. And I am able to judge the susceptibility of the child. This is what is known as the test dose. And if I find that there is a child is idiosyncratic or child is hypersensitive, you know, then I don't repeat it, you know. Or if I repeat, then I go to 10 glasses instead of 5 glasses. You know, I dilute it much more and, you know, stir 20 times each. But if I feel the child is not so sensitive, then I stick on to the 5th glass, and that is how I use. And this method helps me in treating common cases like viral fever, like viral cough and cold, influenza, tonsillitis, common pediatric illnesses like measles, chicken pox, skin diseases, with good results. So this is one way of little different posology which I use in pediatric cases.
Perfect. How about telling us about one of the? I mean, I've read through a number of the remedies in your book, and I found some information there that I had seen in my own practice in the past that I had never seen in any other books, which I found very interesting. Maybe you could just share about one of the remedies, something that's interesting for us.
Oh, why not? I would select, I think, the remedy Plumbum Metallicum, you know, which I have used in pediatric cases with much success. And see, this particular remedy, when you think of, I always compare it with Baraita Kaap. You know, whenever I see Baraita Kaap or whenever I see Alumina, I always think of Plumbum. And whenever I think of Plumbum, I never make, forget to compare it with Baraita Kaap and Alumina, because these remedies are clinically so identical that you can always end up giving one for another. Let me tell you some very common features of three remedies which are so common to all of them. Like, these people are very late comers, you know, this pediatric age group people who belong to Plumbum, Baraita, Alumina are always very late, you know. They are always absorbed in their thought. They are very capricious by nature. They are covered eyes. They are always having a what is known as a forsaken feeling. They are frightened very easily. They are a little irresolute. They are lazy, obstinate. These are the mental features of the remedy which are quite confusing and common. Even at the physical level, if you go and check it up, they have a what is known as a cracked lip, which is common in all the remedy. They have what's usually an inactivity of the rectum. They have got tendency to induration of the gland, which is common. They have got a profuse salivation. They are highly prone to what is known as retention of urine. And they are very slow. All these remedies are very slow. Now the identifying features for Plumbum as such, as a, you know, as a remedy, is what is known as most important is the performance anxiety. Anticipation and performance anxiety is very strong in Plumbum, and the timidity in front of public, timidity in front of society. And then another important aspect is that they are very slow learners, slow in speech, slow academically. They can't grasp things very fast. Strong fear of being touched. This is very important. Like a spider remedy, the Plumbum children do not want themselves to be the touch, you know. And they are very good at inciting other children to do wrong things like Alzheimer's. They have a lot of behavioral problem, and these children are a little secretive. They are striking, they stamp their feet, they spit and bite in anger, and can only be calmed down by gentle rocking. So these are some of the features which are very characteristic of the mind of the plumbum child. At the physical level, if you see, they complain of strong migraines. You know, in plumbum you can have a very strong migraine with projectile vomiting, you know, and these migraines are associated with constipation. At the level of the mouth, you will see the profuse salivation, which is a very important concomitant. Extreme thirst, this is very important. This, they crave for biscuits, they crave for rye bread, you know. They crave for fried foods, which is very important aspect. Of course, constipation, as everybody knows, is a very important symptom. And then the nephrotic syndrome in plumbum metallicum. It covers all the varieties of nephrotic syndrome, which is important aspect at the level of physically. And the at the level of the extremities, and you will see the trembling, very typical of plumbum. Offensive footsteps, and they sleep on the abdomen, which is a very important position. And whenever they have fever or whenever they have pyrexia, they are always very sleepy like Gelsemium children. And the typical epilepsy of plumbum, that during the convulsions they have involuntary urine, and the limbs become extremely flexed. They develop incoherent speech during convulsions. And they are highly prone to rickets. I have seen many plumbum children, they are highly prone to rickets, and they usually perspire more on the chest, you know. So these are the some of the features which are being very strong in plumbum, and on that symptoms I have treated many cases of epilepsy, nephrotic syndrome, childhood behavior disorders, recurrent tonsillitis. That's all.
Is it a remedy you give commonly in for children, Farooq?
Pardon?
Is it a remedy that you give commonly for children?
Yes, I do. Plumbum is one of my very favorite remedy. Especially if I see a typical Baraita Kaap child, you know, and many times I've seen that plumbum follows Baraita Kaap, you know, or the plumbum follows alumina.
Sure. Maybe you could tell us, do you find that there's that the remedies that you give for children tend to be different than the remedies that you give for adults? I mean, is there a group of remedies that tends to be more common for children?
Yeah. There is the definite relationship. Let me give you an example of Solanaceae family, you know. Now, as you know, in Solanaceae family, we have got Belladonna, we have got Hyoscyamus, we have got remedy Stramonium, you know. And I think so, this type of Solanaceae is very important and most commonly prescribed in pediatric age group. While the other members of Solanaceae is not so frequently seen in pediatric age group. Now you'll ask me a question, why? The most important question is that if you go beyond, you know, and understand the detailed mind of these remedies of Belladonna and Hyoscyamus and Stramonium, you will see that they have got a lot of problem emotionally when they were trying to develop psychosexually. If you understand the four stages of Sigmund Freud psychosexual behavior, you will see that most of these Solanaceae families are stuck up either at the oral stage of Freud or what is known as at the level of what is known as anal fixation. And that is why, because these type of disorders of anal fixation and oral fixation, these are the thing which you see more in childhood. And that is why these type of remedies, because they have such type of symptomatology on proving, they are more used in a pediatric age group and rather used little less in a adult age group. Let's go to another family. let's say the talk about the composite family. Now here also you will see that in Arnika, this is very important aspect. Now, in Arnika, even though it's from the superficial, you will see that it's a remedy for injury, but it has got a many deeper symptom, you know. And this is the important symptom of Arnika, which I have seen, is the forsaken feeling. And this forsaken feeling comes from when the child is not nurtured properly. And the nurturing problems leading to forsaken feeling is a very important symptom I have seen in Arnika. So that is why this compositive family comes up very close in the pediatric age group. You can also, you know, use Arnika when there is an ailment from grief in a child, you know, or mental shock, you know, when this is very common when the parents suffer from some accident or when the parents suffer from some illness, you know, and I have used Arnika many times in this aspect in a child when the parents are, you know, the mother is suffering from some disease, she is admitted in the hospital, she cannot look after the child for a very long time, and then the child suffers from a grief or a little mental shock. This is very important. And then comes what is known as the most important, the fears, you know, of Arnika. Arnika is loaded with fears, you know, and the most commonest fear that I have seen in my practice is the fear of crowd in a child, you know, or fear of approaching others, and fear of failure in Arnika, or fear that something will happen, or fear of being injured, you know, or fear of open spaces. This is very important. And fear, you know, if you see, there is a very nice thing which can which you would like to know, and that is fear of air raids, you know. Now this, during the time of wars, you know, when there are air raids, you know, Arnika is mentioned in that rubric of fear of air raids. So this type of symptomatology in a child, I think so, Arnika I use much more from the mind, emotional symptom in pediatric age group. Rather, I have hardly used Arnika in adults from the, considering the symptoms from the mind. And the umbilifery family, you know, and even though Kodam is a remedy which one tries to use, you know, for adults, but I have seen many Kodam children also in my practice, you know, and with good results, you know. But only thing is that you should look for the right symptomatology, and yet in Kodam also you will see a lot of forsaken feeling, you know, being in umbilifery family, ailments from being alone, you know. This is a very important symptom of Kodam, or ailments from grief, which is another very important symptom in Kodam, you know. And then in Kodam you should look for what is known as the typical anxiety in a child that develops during sleep, you know, anxiety during sleep. You will see the Kodam comes very high. And if you look under the fear aspect of a pediatric age group, some common fears that you will see is the, again, the fear of crowd, you know, which it shares with Arnika, and the fear of approaching others. Fear of stranger is very characteristic. Fear of robbers is very characteristic in child. And I had a case of a Kodam child who had basically a very bad intestinal colic, you know. And I think so there were four symptoms. Thunderstorm was there, fear, and the strangers were there. And I think so there was a fear of high places were there, because the child could not sit in a, you know, certain rides because of a height, you know. And Kodam was coming very high in consideration. And this was the thing where I could use more of Kodam in a pediatric age group. So certain remedies I do use it, which are so characteristic in a child, which I don't use much in adults. And there are certain remedies I use it in adult also, but the symptoms are quite different for which I use.
So you're saying that oftentimes the picture of the remedy for a child will be different than the picture of the remedy for the adult?
Yeah. Sometimes I do see certain symptoms or certain group of symptoms you will see more in a pediatric age group, and certain symptoms you will not see in adults. This is purely because of this, what I have said in the beginning, the psychosexual development and the problems related to pediatrics, you know, like all this anal fixation, oral fixation, Oedipus complex. See, this Oedipus complex syndrome also is very importantly commonly seen in pediatric age group. And we have certain remedies, you know, in fact, I have given my edition of this particular Oedipus complex in the radar program, you know. But, yeah, so these remedies are very important.
Very interesting. I was curious a little bit, Farouk, about the title of your book, Clinical Observations. Can you can you tell us a little bit about that?
The title, yeah.
Yeah.
See, what is most important is that over ever since I have been practicing homeopathy since last 23 years, I have seen that there are very few materia medicas which are authentic. Most of the materia medicas that has come up recently or in the last few years are usually Xerox of a Xerox of a Xerox, you know, because it's more of a compilation, you know. And the profession does not need compilation, because now everybody has a computer, so everybody can compile their own notes. For that, we don't need an author. What is most important lacking today in homeopathy is the clinical observation. What are your observations in your practice? What have you seen beyond materia medica in your practice? What have you not seen? What have you seen? Like, there are many things in carcinosin which I have never seen in my practice, like fear of spiders. I have never verified carcinosin for that. But I have seen repeatedly love for animals or love for dogs in my practice, and I have confirmed this particular symptom. So what we require is this pure observation in your practice, away from materia medica, repeatedly confirming things in your practice, the situations, the presentation, and this is what is known as the clinical observation, clinical confirmation, and we need such books and such works more in homeopathy today.
Do you still rely on a lot of the original provings, Allen's Encyclopedia and things like that, or are you?
Yes. Basically, the materia medica which I have usually referred to is the Farrington materia medica. I study a lot of materia homeopathy from Farrington. Another book that has been very useful to me is the Condensed Materia Medica by Harry. It's a very nice book because it gives you a lot of clinical observation. Then the Nair's repertory I use a lot in my practice, Kelvin Nair, you know. And he was one of the disciples of Herring, and so I use a lot of Kelvin's Nair stuff. And then the Common Materia Medica by Dunham, Lippi are my favorite ones, you know. And I try to give a lot of importance to their editions.
That's a pretty good group of books for sure. Okay, so let me just ask one more question, then I'll open it up to the group. Maybe you could tell us about future works that you're doing, future books, projects. What are you working on?
Yeah. Right now, I am working on the book on plants. You know, because right now we have collected a lot of information on plant remedies, especially studying the basic group. Like, let's say, compositae, or let's say, umbilifery, and trying to study the common features, trying to see when did we prescribe, you know, this particular group, and how did we prescribe, trying to basically show us our personal observation, nothing to do from the compilation from point of view, or nothing to do from downloading information from the internet, but trying to basically define what we have seen, what we have verified, and what we have practiced. This is one project which will be published very soon. The second project, as you all know, that I'm working on materia medica, but the clinical materia medica. I mean, how to identify a Ipecac child who is sitting in front of you, and how to identify a fever of Bryonia when a patient has, in a very simple clinical observation. So that work I'm doing right now. These are the two main projects.
Fantastic. Okay, well, I think I'll open it up to the group. I'm sure this has been a very informative talk, and I'll open it up, and I'm sure people will have a lot of questions. So just hold on 1 second.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Dr. Master, I have a two-year-old who has got, a lot of behavioral problems. Main problem is is very cruel to his brother, both younger and the older brother. He's only 2 years old, but tries to hurt his six-year-old brother as well as the baby. And the other thing is, he's very, very restless. Mom says he's hyperactive all the time. And his problem started even before he was born. He was very restless, even in utero. And the mom was very sick. And after he was born, he was very colicky. He would not cuddle, bond with the mom. And the other thing is, he's very fearless. And I'm not able to decide between whether he needs hyoscyamus or veratrum. You know, when I repertorize, I get all kinds of remedies. Do you have...
Yeah, please talk.
Are you finished with the question?
Yeah.
Okay.
See, it is very difficult to give me an exact answer what your child needs, but I would be very much interested in analyzing the child in a much more detailed way. You should find out what happened during pregnancy. You should try to find out what is the family situation. And maybe you should read certain remedies. I would think you should read agaricus first, you know, and remedies like opium and agaricus should be read very clearly. And as far as what
you
said about the cruelty...
Symptoms. Is that with Farooq?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as far as she said that cruelty towards her brother and all these things, this is very nicely described in Materia Medica of Kali Foss. If you read Kali Foss from the Kent, you know, he has mentioned all this about the cruelty towards the family and why the child behaves like that. Maybe you can find your answer somewhere there, but otherwise it requires a detailed clinical you know, stuff, you know, to talk and to get more symptoms.
Thanks, Farooq.
Then what is the other one?
Master, can I ask one question?
Go ahead.
Yes, what is this oral fixation, anal fixation?
Yeah, see what happens is that when the child is born, basically the child, you know, loves to, the only entertainment that the child has is the sucking of the breast. And that is how the child derives the pleasures, you know. Do you follow? And this is during the first 3 months when the child, the day the child is born to the first 3 months. Now what happens if there are any problem with the mother and the child during those period where the mother is not able to give that pleasure to the child and the child is not able to suck the breast of the mother or there is no breastfeeding at all. Then later on when the child grows old, there are a lot of emotional problems connected with the child's behavior. This is what is known as the oral fixation. Do you follow? And the in anal fixation, what happens is that between the period of what is known as the 6 months, you know, to, or rather say 4 months to 8 months, this is the period when the child decides when he wants to pass the stools and when he wants to pass the urine, and that decision is purely at the level of the child's psychology, child's own will and desire. But what happens is that many times the parents try to control them. Oh, you should not spoil my this costly bed sheet, and oh, you should not spoil my this furniture. And then when the mother starts controlling the child, at that time the child loses his own independence, whether I should pass or whether I should not pass. And later on when the child grows old, he suffers from certain pattern of behavior, what we call as an anal fixation, where the child becomes... doesn't develop any self-confidence, does not develop any confidence to take decision, and he becomes very timid, and this is a part of what is known as the anal fixation. You can read it in Sigmund Freud's psychology.
Thanks, Farooq.
Constipation,
yeah.
Doesn't develop obstinate constipation that they don't pass.
Yes, in anal fixation you do have constipation also.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
We see so much autism nowadays in the U.S. and U.K., and wondering if you're seeing that similar thing there, and if you're having success at all with treatment. It's a very complicated issue, it seems to me.
I couldn't hear it properly.
Oh, she asked Farooq. She said that in North America, we see a lot of autism, and she's wondering if you see a lot in India, and what is your success with it?
Yes, very good. We have, in fact, many autistic cases in India. and we find some very good results, but I have not used any unusual remedy till now. Most of my autistic children have improved with very common remedies like Bufo, like Agaricus, like Tarantula, like Tuberculinum Phosphorus, and the results are very good. It all depends on how you individually analyze the case.
Have you prescribed Cannabis Indica for autism?
No, not yet.
Not yet? Okay.
Not yet.
Okay, thank you. I'll open it up again.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Farouk, thank you for this evening. And do you have any particular group of remedies that you find are useful for children who are born of one or both alcoholic parents?
Yeah, we don't have a remedy like that, but let me explain to you that when the parents are alcoholic, there are certain common symptoms which we have seen, because alcoholism is a very common problem in India also. And we have seen certain common features in a child, and you have to read the mind of rustoxycodendron, you know, because rustoxycodendron is one remedy where you will see that a child may develop symptomatology if one of the parent is what is known as alcoholic. The second remedy that you should read of is stramonium. The third is opium, and the fourth is mercury. These are the four remedies which I have frequently seen, that when somebody is little alcoholic, little violent, you know, and the child develops a fear and the child is extremely frightened, what will happen when my father arrives in the house and all those things. These are the group of remedies which you should think of.
Thank you, Farouk.
Can I ask one more question?
Krishna, why don't you give somebody else a chance?
Yeah.
I have a question. Excuse me. Up to what age do you treat babies or children according to the state of the mother during pregnancy? And when do the children become for you more autonomous individuals?
Yeah, there are no fixed rules for that. It all depends on how strong the influence was at that particular time. See, what happens is that nobody's pregnancy is uneventful in life. Everybody's pregnancy has got some definite history, whether emotional, physical, or in any direction. What we are interested in, not those small things, you know, which happen during pregnancy. We are interested in trying to know a very strong state, a very strong situation which has disturbed completely, which has shaken up completely the mother. And the effects that goes into the fetus and that effects remains in the child maybe for a very pretty long time. Let's say the child may be 10 years old, and when you find out that the state was very, very strong, then we give a lot of importance. If the state was not strong, not so weak, we are not very bothered of trying to take those data from the past. So nothing depends on the age of the child. Everything depends on how strong the state was with the mother.
What is the latest that you've actually seen this influence, the state of the mother, would you say?
Yeah. Let's give you, Kim, a very nice example. Let's say that, you know, I had a child with epilepsy, you know. And this was not controlled by cocktail of anti-epileptic drugs, you know, and we tried homeopathy and we were failure with that also. And then when we tried to find out a lot of histories from the mother, we found out that when the mother was 7 months pregnant, and when this lady was trying to go to a graveyard one day to attend a funeral all on her own, she fell down, you know. She fell down into a ditch, you know, about 4 to 5 feet deep. She sprained her ankle. She could not come out. It was an evening time. She developed a lot of fright. She shrieked for the help, but there was no one around because it was a lonely place. So for a few hours, she was all alone, you know, and she developed a lot of fright. Gradually, somebody came and helped her out. She comes to home, and she forgets the whole episode within few days. And then, after a few months, she delivers a child. Nothing happens, and after a few years, the epilepsy starts. So this was the situation. And so when the child becomes 10 years old, the mother has absolutely no memory of all these things. And so for many months, this particular episode is never discussed with us. And then later on, when we've tried to, you know, go more into the detail and keep on probing, we ultimately got out this history. And straight away we gave stramonium after that, you know, and the child improved.
So even at the age of 10 years, huh?
Yeah, the child was 10 years old.
Fantastic. Okay, hold on.
Can I ask about vaccines? That, what is the policy about vaccines, vaccinated children, and they develop autistic behavior?
Yeah. The vaccination in India is not a compulsory like in United States. So in India, I discourage my, at least my patients not to go for any vaccination, but they should be under constant care of a homeopathic physician, giving them the right constitutional medicine to make them strong, you know, immunologically. Otherwise, if they are not going to take proper homeopathy also, and if they are not going to take vaccination, then there is a big risk. So then I said, okay, you do what you want. But people who are very committed to my treatment, I don't advise any vaccinations.
Thanks, Farooq.
No, like pertussis and all.
Another question, please, from somebody else?
Just a quick one. And one of
go ahead,
books,
yes.
Just the books that were mentioned, what did you list after the condensed Materia Medica by Herring and just before Lippe?
Wow.
It was
yeah.
Mayer's repertory.
Mayer's repertory, yeah.
Yeah. See, what happens is that the Mayer repertory is extremely useful for those people who would like to learn the clinical observation, because Mayer gives you a lot of clinical rubrics, which is lacking in most of the repertories like Bony Motions, like Kent, you know. And I have incorporated many rubrics in my own personal repertory by reading Mayer. I think so. The new rubrics, forget the remedies, but the new rubrics that you see in Nair, which is nothing but a pure clinical observation. Like, I had worked in the Department of Neurology for about 2 years, and I did not find any repertory which gives you a lot of information on meningitis and related rubrics. But when I read Nair repertory, I was surprised that I could see so many rich information on meningitis and meningitis-related rubrics in the repertory, and I could use those rubrics, you know. Similarly, when I was doing my work on cardiology, I could see so many interesting rubrics related to cardiology in the chapter of heart, you know, in Nair. In condensed Materia Medica of Herring, the same thing happened. See, Nair was basically a disciple of Herring, and he used to observe Herring in his clinical practice, and he used to make small notes, you know, of his observation that what Herring does. And if it, the Nair repertory is the compilation of those notes. So actually, in condensed Materia Medica of Herring, you will see all the same information repeating, you know. So these two books, the Nair repertory and condensed Materia Medica, should be studied together in your clinical practice, and you will get a rich information of clinical stuff.
Farooq, if you have a...
Kim, more information about those books is on the website.
Thanks, Allison. Farooq, if you have a homeopathic software program and it has Herring's guiding symptoms and Herring's condensed Materia Medica in it, do you feel it's still necessary to use Nair's repertory?
Nah. Yeah, you see, everything which is there in Nair is not there, you know.
There are things in Nair that are not
Herring.
In Herring, is what you're saying.
Yeah, so I think so. Nair, is, to me, is a very important and a useful repertory.
Thanks, sir. Okay, why don't we have one last question?
Rock.
Yeah.
What were the remedies that you mentioned for autism besides Bufo and
Versaline? See, as I told you, Dr. Karim, I don't have any specific remedies for autism, but the remedy which I have found some good results with is tuberculinum, agaricus, Bufo, mercury, phosphoric acid. These are the remedies which I have used, you know, with good success, you know. You don't have to, I will tell you one very good thing. Just don't look at the repertory for the rubric autism, because that will lead you to nowhere, you know. The best rubric to see for autism is indifference to the surrounding, which has got about, I think so, 23 to 25 rubrics, and that is a very nice rubric to start with. If you want to begin your study of autism, I think so, you should study this rubric, indifference to the surrounding, and you will see some good remedies in the radar program, you know. Just open the synthesis repertory and you will see this.
Nair, N-A-I-R.
K-N-E-R-R.
N?
K-N-E-R-R. party RRRR. Okay, so, Farouk, thank you so much for what was a very informative, a very instructive call. Thank you, everyone, for being on the call. And we will have a part two of this call. I don't remember the date right now, but there is a part two. We will send an email around to let everybody know, and we'll pick up right where we left off. It'll have a similar format. I'll interview for a little while, and then we'll open it up to questions.
Can I say hello to Dr. Farouk?
Yes, go ahead, Itzhak.
Dr. Farouk, master.
Yes, sir.
Itzhak Fish.
Ah, Fish. How are you?
Fine, thank you. And I hope that you
thank
should be the same.
Yeah, thank you.
Hi,
okay.
Farouk.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye.
Thank
bye.
You.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thank
you,
bye-bye.
Thank you, Kim.
Bye-bye.
Kim.
Bye-bye.
Thank, thank you, Kim.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Kim.
Take care.
Yeah?
Can I ask you a quick question? It's Sally in New York.
Oh, hey, Sally.
Hi. Do you know where I could find information on the remedy melatonin?
Did you search in your program?
I did, and there's nothing. No rubrics, nothing.
Why don't you call me tomorrow, and I'll see what I can find for you.
Where can I find you to call you?
707-822-5807.
822, what's the left?
5807.
5807?
Yeah.
You're a sweetheart.
Okay, take care, everyone. Have a good night.
Can I be heard?
What's that, yeah?
Which I record is this 822?
You know what, I've been listening the whole time, and I wasn't aware of the fact that you can actually hear me, but I have a very bad problem with my son and fear, and we are unable to get to the root of it. And on the surface, he's a highly functioning kid, but he won't walk from room to room in our home without being scared to death. He needs to be accompanied.
Mm-hmm.
He just won't walk from room to room. And the problem is it's affecting all areas of his life. I mean, he just can't, you know, and that's basically it. I mean, he's scared of crowds all of a sudden unless we're holding on to him. He's
mm-hmm.
scared he's going to get abducted. But it, on the surface, even if you were to interview him, you would never even get this.
Mm-hmm. And what is your question?
Well, you know, right now he's taking Mercurius.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's right or not. I mean, we're just being, like, very understanding parents and very loving.
Are you prescribing the remedy?
No. This is being prescribed by a homeopath.
Oh, okay. You know, I don't know the case, so it's very hard for me to comment on it, to tell you the truth. You know, I'm a big believer of not trying to guess cases with just a few symptoms. So.
Well, the thing is, what you recommend for me to do, this is his second homeopath, and he's a very good homeopath in our area.
Mm-hmm.
He's, you know, they've been grappling at remedies. This is like his sixth or seventh remedy.
Why don't you call me tomorrow, and I'd be happy to.
What is your phone number?
It's 707.
Uh-huh.
822.
Uh-huh.
5807.
5807. And your name is?
Kim Elia, E-L-I-A.
E-L-I-A. Thank you. And is there a good time to call?
You can call any time during the day. It's fine.
Thank you.
The West Coast, just so you know.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Kim.
Thank you. This was very nice.
Kim,
where I can get the repertory? Can you buy this repertory?
Sure, you can buy. You can go to our website and you'll see it on our website.
Oh, this NAS repertory.
Sure.
Have no.
It's not even our software.
It's not. No.
Kim, 707.
822.
822.
5807.
5807.
Yeah. Can you tell me
thank
once
you.
More the spelling, Kim?
K-N-E-R-R.
I didn't hear. Can you repeat it?
K-N-E-R-R.
Oh, right.
Okay, I'm going to get off. Thank you, everyone, again, who's ever else is still
okay,
on.
Good night.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Kim.